management practices for strawberry systems.
Thank you so much. My name is Amanda McWhort. I'm a PhD student at North Carolina State University, and I'm going to talk about some of the work that we've been doing looking at different sustainable soil management practices and their interaction with soil fumigation on soil quality measures in strawberry plastic culture systems in the southeastern United States. So to give you a little bit of background about why we're interested in soil quality and strawberry production in the southeast, I want to talk a little bit about how we manage our soil. And we're kind of unique in North Carolina. North Carolina is the third largest producer of strawberries in the United States, right after Florida and California. But we're different in that the large majority of our marketing is towards pick your own. So consumers actually come out to the fields and pick the berries themselves. And with that, growers are actually really concerned with making sure that their berries are visible to the consumer. So very often they're planting their strawberries right next to the road in the exact same spot every year. And so consumers know where to expect the berries. And that works out great for marketing. But of course, planting in the exact same spot every year in the hot, humid southeast does not work out so well in terms of disease pressure. And so we handle that disease pressure not uniquely among strawberry producers. Most strawberry producers do fumigate, but we also do that every year. And with that, we are getting rid of any pest organisms in our soil, but we're also reducing populations of good soil microbes. And so overall, we're left with very low soil biological activity in our soils. Another thing that's unique about North Carolina is that our production system goes from October to May. So we plant at the beginning of October, and then we generally get done harvesting around the end of May. And so with that, during the months of June, July, and August, generally growers are letting their fields sit fallow. And of course, that fallow period might have some impact on breaking some disease pressure cycles, but we're also not taking advantage of that period to put any organic matter back into our soil, and we're also leaving it prone to erosion, particularly during hard summer rains. So if we're talking about soil quality, we really have limitations in terms of chemical, physical, and biological aspects of our soils for strawberry production in North Carolina. And so there's been some work that has looked at, are there some production practices that we can incorporate into current production systems to kind of counteract some of these negatives? And some of those practices are compost and summer cover crop, both of which, of course, are going to add a lot of organic matter. Summer cover crop, you're also providing cover for the soil during that fallow period. And then there's also been work looking at beneficial soil inoculants, or this idea of adding good soil microbes to the strawberry plug. So we're concentrating those microbes right at the root zone, and then basically when we transplant those plugs out into the field, we're inoculating the entire field with good soil microbes. And previous work has found that the summer cover crop mix actually has been increasing soil nitrogen, and that the plug inoculation combination actually has an impact on increasing yields. So there's been some positive work done. But the issue with these previous studies is that they have always been done in non-fumigated and organic production systems. So we can't really make any recommendations to our conventional growers who are fumigating about the use of these types of practices and the potential impacts on soil quality. So we wanted to take these practices both individually and in various combinations and apply them in both fumigated plastic culture production and non-fumigated. So specifically, for the three practices that we're looking at, the summer cover crop mix that we're looking at is 100 pounds of cowpea and 10 pounds of pearl millet. That is a pretty high seeding rate, and we're doing that because we do have this very short window in which to establish a cover crop, so we're trying to get as much biomass as we can in that short period. Again, beneficial soil inoculants are a combination of vermicompost, where we substituted 20% of the media in the trays that we're making strawberry plugs in with vermicompost, and then we're using a native mycorrhizal fungi inoculum that we collected from near our research site. We're also applying compost at 7.5 tons per acre. And so we did all of these practices individually, and then we did a combination of compost and summer cover crop with the idea that we're seeding our cover crop directly into the compost that had just been applied to try and boost cover crop growth. And then we did the full combination of summer cover crop, beneficial soil inoculants, and compost. Summer cover crops and compost were both applied in early June. Plug inoculation took place in September, and then again, we are planting our strawberries in October. The fumigate that we're using is PicClor 60, which is a very widely used fumigate for strawberry production in the southeast. We did the entire study with Chandler variety berries, and this was a split pod experiment at the Center for Environmental Farming Systems in Goldsboro, North Carolina. It was conducted over 2 years, from 2013 to 2015, so we just finished up our last season this past spring. So we were interested in sort of the holistic view of how does changing how you manage your soil change the entire production system. So we took data on plant growth, yield, soil quality, and we also looked at arthropod pests. For the interest of today, I'm just going to focus on a few interesting results from our soil quality measures, and I'll talk briefly about some chemistry, physical properties, and biological properties that we observed to change. We did take baseline soil management or soil samples before the study began, and then we took other soil samples at the end of each season. We also looked at our arbustor mycorrhizal populations in terms of percent root length colonization throughout the season. And we took those samples at 5 different points that correlate to different phenological stages of the strawberry crop in the spring. So looking first at our chemical properties, we didn't see that fumigation had any effect on influencing any chemical properties of the soil. We did see, however, that compost had an impact on increasing certain measures of soil fertility. So in both years of our study, compost increased soil pH relative to the control, also had the same effect on base saturation, and it reduced exchangeable acidity. And of course, all of these three measures are very closely related. After the second year of our study, so 2 years of compost application, we actually saw that compost increased cation exchange capacity over the control. So this represents a practice that growers who are both fumigating and not fumigating can use to impact these measures of soil fertility. Some things that we looked at for physical properties were aggregate size distribution, and also threw in organic matter here because it's very heavily related to aggregate size distribution. We again saw no effect of fumigation on this measure or any measure of, including our different soil management practices, also had no effect on any physical properties. This is something that we're interested in continuing to monitor, particularly because of some of the changes that we observed in terms of soil biology that might, in the long term, have an impact on aggregate size distribution and organic matter. So getting into soil biology, one of the most interesting results that we saw in both years of our study was the failure of plug inoculation to actually reestablish mycorrhizal fungi into the fumigated system. So in both years, we inoculated our strawberry plugs. Before they went into the field, we checked them for percent root length colonization. They went into the field with colonization rates of around 24%. They went to the field in October. We came back in January, and we saw that there had been a reduction in percent colonization across both fumigation treatments. So in this graph, all the plots, or all the blue lines are our non-fumigated plots, and all the red lines are the fumigated plots. So we saw this reduction across both treatments, but throughout the entire season from January to May, at every sampling date, percent colonization was reduced in the fumigated system. So we took live mycorrhizal fungi, put them into the fumigated system, and they didn't survive. And so this may point to some low-level effect of the fumigant beyond even the 21-day plant-back period on suppressing mycorrhizal fungi. On the other hand, if you look at all of those blue lines or all of our different treatments within the non-fumigated system, you can't actually pick out which one is our plug inoculation treatment. And that is because we had so much native mycorrhizal fungi in our system that they ended up colonizing the plants just as well as our pre-inoculated plugs. So we had tons of mycorrhizal fungi active in our system that did not survive fumigation and did not rebound throughout the entire season. We also did some on-farm work during our second year to have growers try out this plug inoculation technique, and they were using commercial inoculums and different strawberry varieties, and some of them were using different fumigants, and we basically saw the same result where we weren't able to reestablish mycorrhizal fungi. At the end of our second year, we wanted to use phospholipid fatty acid to assess changes in microbial biomass to see, after 2 years of continuous management with these different practices, was there an effect on shifting microbial populations. And we did do this, the sampling for phospholipid fatty acid at the end of the season. So we did it in May or June. So it's been 8 months since the last fumigation event. And despite that time lag between fumigation and our sampling period, we still did see that fumigation had lower total microbial biomass relative to the non-fumigated system. And this is kind of unique because other work has shown that after 4 or 5 weeks beyond fumigation, that total microbial biomass is reduced. But generally, they see that populations tend to rebound. However, many of those studies are only conducted for 1 year, and so this is our cumulative effect of 2 years of fumigation does seem to have an impact on, even at the end of the season, reducing microbial activity in the soil. And so total microbial biomass was reduced because every group that was studied was actually reduced except for the anaerobes. The anaerobes were no different in terms of their population size between the fumigated and non-fumigated system. However, when we look at what percentage of these different fatty acid groups are making up our total microbial biomass, we did see a shift in which groups predominated between the fumigated and non-fumigated system. So again here, blue are our non-fumigated bars, and the pink bars are the fumigated system. And here we saw that mycorrhizal fungi and eukaryotes tended to predominate in the non-fumigated system, whereas gram-positive bacteria in the anaerobes tended to predominate in the fumigated system. There has been some work that has been done that has shown that fumigation tends to favor either gram-negative or gram-positive bacteria depending on the fumigant that is used. But this could be concerning, particularly the reduction in mycorrhizal fungi and eukaryotes for different nutrient cycling long-term, and also other contributions, particularly mycorrhizal fungi, to soil physical properties. We also wanted to look at using contrast analysis to evaluate, did any of our soil management practices have an impact on mitigating this change to total soil microbial biomass that we observed between the two fumigation systems. And so in this graph, you can see that our plug inoculation technique, or the AMF plus VERM, and the compost and cover crop were no different relative to the control within the non-fumigated system, but that all of those management practices had slightly higher total soil microbial biomass within the fumigated system. So all those practices were having a small effect on mitigating that reduction to microbial biomass that we're observing in the fumigated system. However, none of those practices were able to reestablish microbial activity at the same level as what we were observing in the non-fumigated system. And then more specifically, when we looked at the biomarker just for mycorrhizal fungi, again, there was no difference between any of our treatments in the non-fumigated system. But in the fumigated system, compost specifically had higher rates of this specific biomarker for mycorrhizal fungi relative to the control. And this is interesting because our sampling took place almost a year after the last application of compost and 8 months after the last fumigation event. And this may be related to our measure of pH, where slightly higher pH tends to favor more mycorrhizal fungi, which we also observed with compost application. But there's also been other work that has shown that compost application actually has an effect on reducing the half-life of fumigants in the soil. So this is something that warrants further investigation. So when we looked at our three different management practices and their impacts on soil quality in both fumigated and non-fumigated systems, we saw that plug inoculation did not work to reestablish mycorrhizal fungi into that system. It also did not increase mycorrhizal colonization in the non-fumigated system. But it did have higher total microbial biomass relative to its control in the fumigated system, as did cover crops. Compost had an impact on increasing measures of soil chemistry across fumigation systems, specifically soil pH, base saturation, and CEC after the second year. And it also had an impact on having higher total microbial biomass and mycorrhizal fungi relative to its control within the fumigated system. So we did see that some of these practices can impact certain measures of soil quality regardless of what fumigation system they're incorporated in, but other practices cannot overcome the negative effect of fumigation on soil biology, despite small improvements. I do want to say thank you to my committee members, Michelle Schroeder Moreno in Crop Science, Gina Fernandez in Horticulture, and then Hannah Barak and Yasmin Cardoza in Entomology, and also to our funders from the National Sustainable Strawberry Initiative. And with that, I'm happy to take questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Amanda, for the presentation. We have time for a couple of questions specifically for Amanda. Is there any specific questions? Here we have.
No, the field site that we were using had a history of strawberry production. It had been out of strawberry production for a few years, but it had never been fumigated before. Mm-hmm.